This News Talk 1010 podcast is brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
The viewpoints expressed in this program represent the opinions of the host and participants as of the date of publication. The opinions are not intended to be a substitute for financial and legal advice or a substitute for medical advice and best practices by leading medical authorities, as the information surrounding the current coronavirus pandemic is constantly evolving.
It was May the 23rd, a Saturday, thousands flocking to Trinity Bellwoods Park. Going to do what you do in a park, drink, soak up the sun. Wait for the mayor to show up, give you a what for. Health units sharing their analysis in a response to a Twitter user emphasizing that despite the lack of evidence linking outbreaks to the crowding, that it's still important for people to continue to follow their directives. A lot going on behind the scenes with this one, mostly behind the scenes, people expecting some sort of surge, right? Well, it's official today. No link between Trinity Bellwoods and outbreaks of cases. So does this mean crowding in a park is technically okay? Dr. Abdu Shekawy joins us, infectious disease specialist with the University Health Network, to give us his thoughts. Doctor, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
Is this a dangerous conversation to have right now? Because I think a lot of people are doing the whole I told you so thing. And is that a dangerous attitude to have right now?
I think it is a dangerous attitude. And look, I mean, there's no secret that I was very much front and center in this whole story with my fairly emotional plea to everyone when I saw the images from Trinity Bellwoods. My intention is not to try and lay blame and to make any one particular segment of our population feel as though they have to shoulder the burden of sacrifice for this pandemic. I'm very pleased that we haven't seen a surge. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen, by the way. It doesn't mean that we are not going to have to watch very carefully what happens over the next week. We saw how things tailed off initially, and then we saw little spikes even before the Mother's Day situation. So I'm not ready to close the book on this quite yet. At the same time, I think the principles that I had been preaching and those that I think are very important to still bear in mind are that we have to be careful in terms of the proximity that we have to people who may be strangers, to the amount of closeness and the continuousness of those exposures. This is not a license to go ahead and say, I told you so, there's no threat going on here.
So let's try and put this as eye level as we possibly can, okay? I go to Trinity Bellwoods Park, I go with five of my friends, we're there with thousands of other people, and there's not a major outbreak. Does that just mean that we were lucky?
I don't know if I want to say we were lucky. I guess there's some degree of luck involved. Some of it may have been that, within the smaller circles of people, maybe they weren't quite as intimately engaged as the pictures seem to suggest. Perhaps people were engaging more with those that were within their own very tight network of friends as opposed to total strangers. There's obviously different levels of risk that come upon us depending on who exactly you're interacting with. There are more than enough case reports of other large crowds, whether it's parades or concerts or some other event that certainly did spawn spikes in infection during the pandemic. So I don't think we want to take the attitude that there was absolutely nothing wrong with that display and that everybody can pile into as many parks as they want because nothing happened from Trinity Bellwoods. I think that would be a dangerous attitude to adopt.
What do you think this does for, the messaging around and communications to the public around how to comply with, medical advice and the public officers of health? We've had, everybody, we'll wait and see if there's a big spike. The spike does not happen. And then now we have the WHO, who yesterday said transmission of the virus from asymptomatic people is very rare and have since backtracked it. I just sort of feel like people now, it's so complicated and people are backtracking and changing that people are almost tuning it out because they don't know what to do and they can't listen to it anymore.
Yeah, and I can understand that there's a certain level of frustration and that the messaging has not been consistent. And I think particularly the WHO statement, which I frankly think was quite ill-advised, has really misled a lot of people. The point of the statement, I believe, was to try and allay concerns around those that were entirely asymptomatic through the course of their infection as being particularly at risk for transmitting to others. What it really didn't take into account was that there's a large number of people who may be pre-symptomatic. That means that at some point in the course of their infection, they will become symptomatic. But in that phase where they are not yet showing symptoms, they could still spread this the infection to many, many others. And that's a really important distinction that wasn't highlighted by that statement. I think it unfortunately confused a lot of people. But, you know, a lot of us infectious disease experts and epidemiologists haven't changed our tune whatsoever. And I hope that people can be patient and try not to get too caught up in the headlines and try and remain patient and attuned to those of us whose messages have been consistent for the last 2.5 months. There are many, many of those people around who I respect greatly. Our attitudes have not changed. And I think that we have to be very careful about throwing the baby out with the proverbial bathwater here. Not everybody has been bad with their messaging, and not everybody has been inconsistent. So I really beg people to stay a little bit more patient and to try and listen before they fold their hands and say the heck with it all.
So, Doctor, one of the things that was interesting to me when you described why we may not have an outbreak in Trinity, related to Trinity Bellwoods, knowing that it's still possible that it could occur, was that maybe folks were actually sticking to their, you know, whatever their social circles were, or, you know, not commingling liberally as much as anticipated. So is perhaps a way forward for people to, you know, approach this in more of like a harm reduction sort of spirit, which is, you know, we know you've got to go outside. If you have to go outside, please stick to your bubble or X, Y, or Z. And as opposed to, you know, we don't want people going to concerts where you're next sitting next to people you don't know. But if you can be responsible, you can go outside. You can have a drink in a park. You can, you know, enjoy your life a little bit. And do you think that would bring a level of compliance or understanding from the public that, you know, we're kind of seeing we're losing a little bit in, over the last week or so?
I think so. I mean, I think we have to be reasonable about how far we can ask people to disengage. And, you know, I had a bit of a humorous exchange with someone on Twitter recently who likened what's going on to sex. And, you know, you have sex with one partner and, you know, that partner's had sex with every other partner that you've had sex with and vice versa. You know, and that may seem like a bit of a comical analogy, but it sort of holds true to the idea that your bubble contains whomever it is who you trust in terms of how responsible they are with their distancing and their habits, et cetera. And so, sure, by extension, you're much better off, you know, being in a small circle of friends whom you trust and you have a level of understanding with than being with total strangers, acquaintances. You have no clue what their risk mitigation strategies are, their level of hygiene, et cetera. So I do think we're going to have to adopt that sort of an attitude and a mentality as we expand our bubbles and we ease restrictions. And I think that's reasonable. I don't see why we can't do that relatively safely, but we need to do it slowly and gradually and thoughtfully. And I don't know that Trinity Bellwoods was necessarily the best representation of that.
A number of people pointing out at 7-10-10, you know, certain experts are saying, especially when it comes to long-term care homes, when the infection rate was so rampant, it had a lot to do with improper ventilation. Is it possible that, you know, outside with demonstrations, outside at parks, that it's not as bad as being in somewhere that's not as well ventilated?
No question about it. You know, the air outside is good. It helps viruses disperse. But we have to remember that the three C's are close, closed, and crowds. So if you're close to somebody else, if you're in a closed space, which is usually indoors, that's a problem. But even if you're not indoors, if you're in crowds, at some point, you know, the outer air and the environment can't protect you. And you're going to be in a space where you're going to unavoidably share, you know, viruses and other infections with others. So definitely it's not the same. Being in parks and playgrounds and being in outdoor spaces certainly mitigates the risk somewhat.
Doctor, we saw today the province announce a plan of sorts to reopen daycares. How much detail in that plan is up for debate right now as we're finding out. But on first blush, do you think this is safe?
It's a really good question. And frankly, I'm very curious to see how this will unfold. They did stipulate that apparently they wouldn't let any more than 10 children in a particular facility at a given time. I don't know how useful that's going to be for facilities that would typically, you know, hold anywhere from, you know, 40 to maybe 60 or more young children. So, you know, let's put that in perspective in the sense that this isn't going to be everybody being allowed to bring their kids back and business as usual. I think theoretically it could work. It's going to put some real pressure on staff within daycare centers to make sure that the daycare centers are designed to allow distancing, to allow for a certain level of hygiene and a standard that's probably, you know, unwitnessed among small children to be enacted. That's a lot of pressure. It's going to be a big responsibility. Can it be done? Sure. How easy is it going to be? Not very. And I don't anticipate seeing daycare the way we normally see it for probably a year, quite frankly. I think it's going to take quite some time to get it back to the level of comfort where you have as many kids in a daycare center as we used to see pre-pandemic.
Let's spend a couple of minutes just before we break for news. I want to ask you about this CP24 story from today saying that cautious Canadians are increasingly wearing masks as they fear a second wave of COVID-19. Does this mean that messaging is finally getting through to people? And is this the best type of advice that everybody that should be wearing a face covering that has the ability to do so, especially when you can't social distance? Is this still the message that we need to be on brand with moving forward?
No question about it. You know, myself and a few of my very respected colleagues like Dr. Jennifer Kwan and Dr. Kashif Pirzada and Joe Vipond in Alberta have been, you know, beating this drum for quite some time. I think the evidence is very good from a lot of other jurisdictions where universal masking has been employed, that it's part of a very good strategy for reducing transmission. I think we want to get the message out that this is a sense of empowerment, that it helps people retain a level of consciousness to do this right and not to make it a label for stigma or fear. And I think it's a great thing for us to adopt. It's cheap, it's easy, it's affordable, and everyone should do it. I wear a mask every time I'm outside of my home when I know I'm not able to distance, and I would implore everybody to do the same.
And with about 35 seconds left, sort of put you on the spot, you know, there is that fear of a second wave. Is it inevitable that that's coming?
I hope not. I mean, I'm certainly more optimistic than I was maybe a week or two ago. But, you know, I've said before, there hasn't been a pandemic in recorded history that hasn't had a second wave. So I think if we don't have one, we'll be very fortunate. But listen, the ball is in our court. The power is in our own hands to behave responsibly, not to let up, and not to let our patience and sacrifices go to waste.
Well said. Dr. Shekawy, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This News Talk 1010 podcast was brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.